Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, this is Nerd Nuptial episode 77. I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm the girl.
And we are talking about Blade Runner 2049. And for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, this is a show where we talk about all things geeky, all things nerdy, and we do it through a married lens because we, as in the girl and I, you and I, are married.
Yes, we are.
And we also have a little baby named Ripley. And it is a wonderful ride that we're on with marriage and parenthood and navigating all things geeky and all things nerdy and still finding the time to actually go see Blade Runner, which was an almost 3-hour movie.
That's true. That was a challenge in itself. We actually went on opening night, which is a new thing for us because we usually go on like Sundays, right?
Yeah, we normally go on the old the old person showing, as some
right.
of my friends say, like
right.
like as early as possible on Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
which just is insane. And we went to a Thursday night, the first showing on
yeah.
at 7 p.m. And it was a surprisingly sparse crowd.
It was. I actually asked you after. I was like, ooh, that's not good. And we actually found out today that in the box office, it's not doing great.
Well, yeah, it's we actually had a conversation about this at the Nerd Party. In our private channel, and you know, like some people are saying, like the newspapers are saying, the blogs are saying that nobody reads newspapers anymore. That yeah, it's kind of like underwhelming performance at the box office, but it's on track to beat Arrival, which is Denis Villeneuve's previous sci-fi work,
mm-hmm.
and that was like a powerhouse. Like that made back its budget; it quadrupled its budget.
Okay.
And that surprised everybody because it had staying power and it kind of came out of nowhere. But for this one, I think because it's such a big sci-fi franchise, it's like a lot of film people know it. It has
right.
Harrison Ford in it and everything like that. I think people were expecting a little bit more than Arrival, which was, it wasn't a part of an IP, a pre-established IP. It was its own story
mm-hmm.
out of nowhere. But it did so well. It was a surprise hit and everybody's banking on Blade Runner 2049.
Well, and we were kind of talking about this, but I feel like unless you're a film fanatic like we are, or you know, super nerdy or into film, you know Blade Runner. Like everyone has heard of Blade Runner and knows
mm-hmm.
like Harrison Ford's in Blade Runner and everything like that. But I don't know if everyone's seen it. Does that make sense? Like it's kind of one of those films where I feel like a lot of people know what it is. They know it's like, oh, sci-fi, but
mm-hmm.
they haven't necessarily sat down and watched it.
Yeah, I think it definitely is one of those movies. You're right. It's
yeah.
one of those movies that everybody is aware of, but not as many people have seen. Like my mom, who's a huge sci-fi fan, just saw it last week because Blade Runner 2049 was coming out.
Interesting.
And actually, a few of my friends actually said that, where they're
really?
Like, oh, in preparation, because they were excited about what they saw in the trailer for Blade Runner 2049.
Oh.
But
they never actually sat
they never
down.
Actually saw the first
huh.
one until this one came out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of revitalized the franchise a little bit.
I think so. Well, I mean, it wasn't a franchise until
well, now,
until
yeah.
Until now.
It's true.
Because it was just a standalone film
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like with Star Trek 09 when J.J. Abrams' Star Trek came out, like tons of people had heard of Star Trek before but never really dabbled in it, and so
mm-hmm.
tons of people went back and started watching the show and the old movies because this movie came out and there was all this buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And you had seen it.
Yeah,
you saw it before me.
Yeah, I saw it in high school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
during your Blockbuster run.
Oh yeah, when I worked at Blockbuster. Got free movies all the time.
So with this movie, because normally what we do is we see a movie and then we rush home and podcast about
mm-hmm.
it. But we didn't do that with this time because it was almost a three hour movie. And so we didn't come home until 10:15.
Right.
And we're just like, no, we're going to bed.
Right. We're old now. Yeah. So it's been, 2 days?
been 2 days and we've talked about it a little bit, but not in depth.
No, we haven't. We just said, like, do you like it? Do you like it? That's about it.
And we are going to get into spoiler territory, but we're going to talk about our first impressions first and talk about what we thought of it, how we kind of felt as we watched it and after we walked out of the theater before we get into specifics.
Okay.
But actually, what I want to talk about is, what do you think of the original?
Oh, I love the original. I do. I think it's also kind of like for its time. Like, it's interesting because when I watched this one, I was like, it's good that they updated it for now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it still had the pacing of the original. But I really enjoy, I think that Blade Runner is iconic for a reason, because it has this feeling of, oh, that's Blade Runner. Does that make sense? Like, when you see it, you're like, this feels like Blade Runner. It's that old technology, but it's new.
Mm-hmm. Retro
future. Retro future. You know, the Asian influences.
I love sci-fi films that have a heavy Asian influence.
Oh, me too. And it makes sense.
It does. It absolutely makes complete sense. That's why I really like Firefly and Serenity.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. And I just think it's like interesting the way that it feels like a real future too. It doesn't necessarily feel so far removed. Like, nothing's is super clean.
It feels real if you disregard that it took place in 2019.
Well, right, exactly. But it feels like a more realistic possible future because of how gritty it is.
And that's also kind of sad too, if you think about it. You know, but it's true.
But it is. It's true. Yeah. You know, it feels like we haven't necessarily taken care of the world, and it's just one of those things where I really enjoy the concept of it, and I think that the performances in the original are amazing.
Yeah.
I
mean, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Right.
Yeah. Sean Young, Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer,
Daryl Hannah.
Oh yeah. It's
awesome.
It's a powerhouse of a cast.
And
that's actually one of the reasons why we were so excited about Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Is because it has Ryan Gosling, Harrison Ford, Jared Leto, and Robin Wright.
Right. And we were joking, I think, on a previous podcast, how, like, you know, this is kind of like a fantasy cast for us.
It really is.
So, yeah, I also feel like I absolutely love Pris, Daryl Hannah's character in Blade Runner, because I really feel like it's like a Rocky Horror / Harley Quinn type
character,
which I just love. Yeah.
You joked about you wanted to put some makeup on your eyes and go.
I thought that would be fun.
And I just needed to get like a huge collar.
That's right.
Because in the original Blade Runner, everyone has a gigantic collar. And then Sean Young comes in and a collar like above her head.
Yeah. I really enjoy it.
I saw it at a young age.
Okay.
On TV.
Okay.
You know, like, I saw it on cable and I
feel like that's one that kind of, well, we were growing up, always kind of popped on.
That
TV
was a mainstay on like TCM and AMC and everything like that. And my parents weren't necessarily that big of fans of Blade Runner, but they were always aware of it and they've seen it and they like Harrison Ford. I think that's the thing. Yeah. They're big Harrison Ford fans.
Sure.
They weren't necessarily big Blade Runner fans.
That makes sense. I think my family is the same way. Like, we saw almost everything Harrison Ford, but I don't think they showed me Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe a little too, I don't know, gritty for me at that time. I remember
seeing it on TV and then just kind of being enraptured by the style of it and the pacing and the music. Mm-hmm. And so I remember asking them to take me to the library or to the movie rental place, I can't remember, and pick it up on VHS.
Okay.
And I just remember watching it over and over again. And I think as I get older, I respect it more than I like it.
I can understand that. I really do understand that. And the pacing, it has something to be desired now.
It's an under 2 hour movie, but it feels like a 3 hour movie.
Oh, it does. Because when you sit down and watch Blade Runner, you're like, okay, I've got to prepare myself to watch Blade Runner. It's kind of like the beginning of Planet of the Apes. You're kind of like,
yes, that's a good, yeah.
Okay, that's good. So I'm going to sit down and watch this, but it's going to take a while for things to get interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about it, like, in Blade Runner, most of the action happens right at the end.
Like
the last 30 minutes.
It is not an action film.
No, it's not.
Like, there's one stint of action when he retires the dancer.
Yeah.
And
very brief.
Very brief. And then the action at the end when he's fighting Daryl Hannah and Rutger Hauer.
Right.
And even that is prolonged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like we're still going here. Yeah, you know, I feel like it's one of those movies that you watch for the performances, not for the pacing. But the pacing also does have, like, a purpose.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
I feel like I, you said, I respect it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But do I enjoy the pacing? Probably not.
Well, I think it's one of those things where when I watch Blade Runner, I enjoy watching it. But it's not one of those movies where you just casually watch it.
No.
I think
you plan on watching it.
I think that's the thing. That's where, like, as I'm watching it, I'm soaking in everything. But I'm just kind of like, whoo, okay, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get going. Let's get
Absolutely.
Going. But then, I don't know. I'm going to sound a little, not hypocritical, but I think I'm going to go back on what I said. Is like, as you're watching it, you, like you said, you have to prepare yourself to watch Blade Runner. And once you do that, you're like, okay, you know, lay it on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to keep moving forward. And whatever the pacing is whatever the pacing is.
Right. That makes sense.
I want to kind of get the rest of the cuts. Because I don't remember any other cut. I remember there being narration, and I remember thinking the narration was really crappy. But really, the only one that I fully remember is the final cut.
Okay. I feel like during my Blockbuster days, I'm pretty sure I saw possibly the other one.
There's like four.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but I'm pretty sure I saw the narration one.
Okay.
If I'm not
mistaken. I can't remember. Like,
yeah.
It would take a master's degree to keep track of all the different cuts of Blade Runner, but there's like a TV version and an international version and then a re-release version. It's just, it's a mess. But I do remember knowing and thinking, oh, the final cut is my favorite.
Definitely.
And this is actually, oh, wait, we just a couple of days ago, like we got it on iTunes. It was, they had it on sale as they do when things get re-released or when sequels come out. It was only like $5 for the HD version on iTunes. And that was the first time ever that I saw it in HD. And it was brilliant transfer.
It was like watching it for the first time. It really was because of how clear it was. Because every transfer I've ever seen was all like too gritty. Does that make sense? Like the screen was, it wasn't supposed to look like that.
Yeah. And it's Ridley Scott himself, looked over. Are approved, I should say, the 4K transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's from. They did a new 4K transfer restoration specifically for this film.
Awesome.
And it really comes across. So if you guys out there are ever, you know, thinking about getting the final cut on Blu-ray or on iTunes or Vudu or something like that, do it. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that came out in 1982, and we're now in 2017.
That's right.
And we saw it, and so after you left this, let's phrase it this way. Let me restate here so I'm not rambling. Going into it,
mm-hmm.
going into 2049, what were you expecting or what were you hoping for?
I was hoping for the nostalgia of the original and really just to see those actors like in this world. I feel like that was really the main thing, was I wanted to see like Jared Leto and Robin Wright and Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford again. So that was really my whole, I didn't have that many anticipation, I guess. And I just, the trailer looked so interesting to me visually that I think that was the main appeal, was like, oh, this looks cool. And they didn't really give very much away. I'm like, I don't really know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. And I'm on board because of the cast.
I didn't realize how little I knew about the movie until after I saw the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Because after I walked out, I started thinking about the trailers. I was like, those trailers are amazing. Because the way that they're cut is they intrigue you. They show you what the vibe of the movie is going to be.
Accurately.
But they give away nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They give away absolutely nothing.
It's true. It's true. Completely. Yeah. Yeah. What were you anticipating?
What I was hoping for was, and I even said this before we went in, because I think you asked me this question. I said, all I want is a beautiful movie and a good story. Like, I tried to temper my expectations. I didn't.
Do you want to get disappointed?
I didn't want to get disappointed. I didn't want to say like, oh, this better be better than the original.
Mm-hmm.
I want this. I want that. I want this. I want that. It was just like, no, I want it to be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and I want a good story. That's all I want. That's yeah, all I want. I've been that. Burned too many times too lately by too many films
sure.
to start making demands. And that's what I got. I got a good story, and it was beautiful. So after you saw the film, first impressions, walking out of the theater, what did you think? Without spoiling anything.
I was excited. And I feel like the further away from it that I've gotten, the more I want to go back and watch it. I feel like, which is rare, because there's sometimes when I walk out of a movie, I'm like, okay, I've seen that. I don't need to see that again. Yeah. Whereas this one, I feel like I need to see it again. Like I need to almost analyze it. And I wasn't disappointed. It was pretty. I got the cast. Some performances were better than others, but overall I was pretty pleased. How about you?
I could echo exactly what you said. It's I think it's a great story. There was a few bits where just kind of like,
yeah.
Like that was confusing a little bit there. That was underdeveloped there. but overall, very cool. The vibe was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
The music was great.
Oh, yeah.
The pacing was very much like the original, but in a good way.
I think updated and yet update, like, yeah.
Everything was up because that's the thing. Like, the previous one took place in 2019. This takes place in 2049.
Right.
And so things are going to change just like they do in real life.
Right.
And so this movie was updated, but yet it felt like, how do I put this? Like, it felt like it could have been made back to back.
Yes, because they used the same type of technology, only slightly different. Things were not perfect, like they how in the original they mm-hmm. weren't, like Blade Runner, how they weren't. Things were kind of glitchy in places, much more tactile, which I think is, you know, very Ridley Scott. You know,
where that is you, very
you
Ridley
feel
Scott.
Where you are. You know, you think about the Nostromo. We mm-hmm. we feel that ship. Well, you feel the world of Blade Runner, and we were right back there from the very moment we entered the picture.
Yeah.
We were like, okay, yeah, I'm here.
First frame, cool. This is Blade Runner.
Felt exactly.
It. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, that's like cinematography-wise, Roger Deakins is a master, and hopefully gets the Oscar
for this one. Oh my
gosh,
seriously.
And
gorgeous.
Denis Villeneuve is just, he's slowly becoming one of my favorite filmmakers. And
oh, yeah.
I've only seen two of his films. I'm so embarrassed to admit that I haven't seen his other ones.
Yeah.
I haven't.
We needed, that's our homework.
That, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There you go. That's our homework. We're going to go and watch Villeneuve's back catalog.
Yeah.
Because all that you and I have seen is 2049 and
that's right.
Arrival.
And we're totally on board, so we need to go back and
yeah.
do this.
Like, people are probably screaming at their phones right now that we haven't seen
Sicario.
Well,
we can do a podcast about it. We'll see. Yeah.
There we go. But yeah, like, the direction was perfect. The music was perfect. The cinematography was mm-hmm. great. Ryan Gosling.
Oh, he's awesome.
One of his best performances.
Oh, absolutely.
If not my favorite performance.
Oh, me too.
I've ever seen him in.
Yeah.
And even old man Harrison Ford did a good job.
Yes.
Which
he didn't phone it in.
He phones almost everything since Ender's Game. He's just absolutely phoned in, mm-hmm. including Force Awakens. But this one, he absolutely did not. Like, you felt
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. No, I felt like, okay, good, you're trying. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Ford. And it's, I think the only performance where I was like, eh, was surprisingly Robin Wright.
I just didn't think that she, I feel like it could have been anyone. Like, I didn't think it necessarily needed to be Robin Wright.
I think it was two things. I think the dialogue she was given was very generic.
It was.
And it could have been anyone. And then at the same time, I feel like she was trying so hard to make it hers that it came off desperate. Because I just don't think she had enough
to
work with.
Yeah. There was no meat there for her to work with. You're right. Yeah.
And so, in which, I mean, that is saying something because you and I love Robin Wright.
Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that we both have crushes on Robin Wright. So for us to even say anything
remotely negative.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jared Leto was barely in it.
Yeah.
But when he was in it, I was engaged.
Oh, me too.
I was glued to the screen.
Absolutely.
Trying to analyze what he was doing, what he was saying, what he was doing. And he came across came across so well the entire time was just like, give me more, give me more, give me more.
Oh, yeah. Well, kind of like Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Oh.
Well, I think he's an actor that everything he does is for a reason. And you know that he's so in the head of the character that he is playing that you are just like soaking it in. You're like, I need to see more. I need to see more. You're like analyzing his performance because you know he's like giving it 100%.
And I know he's gotten a lot of heat for the offset antics that and onset and offset antics that he did as Joker. I get that. Like he did a lot of jackass things, but I really try my hardest to separate the man from the character or the man from the actor.
Yeah.
It's less like you and I love watching Tom Cruise films.
It's true.
Like he's our go-to with like someone
who's crazy.
He's crazy in their personal life. But when they come up on screen, you're just like, okay, I'm on board.
Right.
Like I'm not going to.
I just want to see him running away from crap.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. I'm not going to follow you in People magazine. I just care what happens on screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Jared Leto is one of those people. It was so many things were well executed. Mm-hmm. It really was a great film. And I think I told you this, I haven't been this pleased with a movie. Not like, cause I've seen TV where I've been like, oh wow, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been that pleased with a movie this year since Logan.
Yeah.
I should say genre.
A genre film.
A genre film, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I agree with you. Like a big blockbuster type film.
Because you and I have seen films, like small films or independent films or even just dramas where we're just like, holy crap, that's a good movie.
Right, but like when you're talking about box office hits or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would.
I think so, yeah. So how about we get into spoiler territory. So there you have it. That's our first impressions. I'd say it's a great film. Go see it on the big screen.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
It's
too pretty not to see on the big screen.
Don't watch this on your phone. Don't watch this on your crappy 13-inch computer monitor. Go to the theater and watch this. And I very rarely say that.
Yeah.
This is worth going to see in the theater.
It is.
Don't see it in 3D. Just because you don't need to see anything in 3D unless it's Avatar.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. You have been warned, spoiler territory from here on out. If you have not seen it, pause this, go watch it, come back, listen. Warning, 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 spoiler. Okay.
All right. Where do we start?
They're right off the bat, and they didn't hide this, which I really appreciated. This wasn't some big reveal. Like, this was something where you're just like, oh, okay, Ryan Gosling is a replicant.
Yeah, I totally did not get that from the trailers. I never suspected that.
Well, they never told you.
Right. But it was just really awesome just to be like, okay, yeah, he's a replicant. Oh, okay.
It was cool because it wasn't a big reveal. It wasn't a huge part. The reveal was not a part of the story. It wasn't a is he not kind of storyline. And I really appreciated that.
So overdone. Yeah.
Because in the first scene, like Dave Bautista, who was in it for one scene.
Yeah, it was a good scene.
He said, he's like, what does it feel like to kill your own kind? And I'm like, whoa, what does that mean? What is he saying there? Is he a replicant? Really? What? Like the first like 5 minutes of the movie? Really? What's going on? And then he's at the police headquarters, LAPD. And then like one dude like gets in his face and says an expletive and then calls him a skin job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, holy crap, he is a replicant.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I didn't see that coming, and I liked it.
I loved it.
I really liked that. Like,
I like that they integrated them into their society where this new realm, this new version of replicants were okay to be on Earth because they could be quote-unquote controlled.
Yeah, and it was almost like there were more replicants than humans in most scenes, you know.
And if you actually
think about it, it was like, oh, yeah. And they just knew who they were, which was cool, too.
I like that. Yeah. Because Dave Bautista was a replicant.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling was a replicant. You saw the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
She was a replicant.
Yeah.
And.
Well, then you had like Jared Leto's like.
Oh, yeah. Right hand woman.
Yeah.
Like whoever she was.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was a replicant. And I loved that scene in between the two of them. When they were in the archives.
Oh, yeah.
And they were kind of just, she's like, isn't it nice when people ask you questions about yourself. And I started thinking about that. I was like, that's so interesting. That is fascinating. Because from someone who literally doesn't have a past.
Right.
And who is just seen as a servant, why would anyone engage them in casual conversation?
Right. It was interesting to hear like of the different classes, basically, because you're a replicant, but you're so real that they use them for everything, mm-hmm. you know, everything from sex to
a policeman
and everything. They're a part of your everyday life. And yet, at the same time, you don't have a past. You're, in a way, they're not real people.
Yeah, that's the whole shtick.
Yeah, so it was just interesting to see that kind of dynamic amongst. It was also interesting, you know, replicant to replicant and replicant to human, mm-hmm. and all those different dynamics were interesting to see.
And yeah, human, like replicant to replicant, human to replicant, and replicant to digital girlfriend.
Yeah. How did you feel about that?
It was
the her moment.
It was very, very Spike Jones.
Oh,
her.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
her. So when he came in, like when he came into his apartment, and music was playing and you could hear a woman's voice yes. in the background, and he's like, hey, you want some coffee? You want this? You want that? He's like, oh, hey, sweetie, how was your day? I was like, something's not right.
Something's off.
Like, mm-hmm. we're not seeing her.
Right.
So I was like, so what's her deal? I was like, is it just a disembodied voice? Is it like
I thought that at first.
Is it like a moon thing? Where, you know, like the emoji with Kevin Spacey, you know, like moving around.
Yeah.
You know, is it like, is she just going to be a computer screen, you know, like, or what is it going to be? Or is it something way sadder where it is literally just a recording where it's not even interactive? That's actually the first thing that popped in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was like, maybe it was just a recording that he recites every single time he comes home because it's someone he once knew.
Right.
You know, he misses her and all he has mm-hmm. is this recording. I don't know, something like just things that popped in my head.
That's interesting because, like, when he walks into his apartment, you know, first of all, they, like, graffitied his door because...
It said Skin Job. Right. Or, no, it said Skinner. Skinner,
yeah. which was interesting to hear all these different terms mm-hmm. for what he...
All these pejorative things.
Yeah, because he's a Blade Runner. He, you know, hunts his own or whatever. And, you know, they walk... You think about walking into Harrison Ford's apartment and he has the piano. You know, I mean, it's dark and, you know, it's not well lit and everything like that, but you can tell someone lives there and, you know, has a passion. Like, he, you know, he uses the piano. He has pictures up. You walk into Ryan Gosling's apartment Kay, mm-hmm. And it's literally a table and a chair and a kitchen, and we don't even see necessarily where he sleeps.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't see where he sleeps yeah. Until later.
Until later, that's right. But it's just very sparse, because why would a replicant need all that?
Yeah, why would he need knickknacks? Why would he need... Right. He doesn't have photos of family on the wall.
Exactly.
And the only thing that looked lived in was his kitchen.
Right, right. And like when we heard the voice, I was like, oh, no. Because I had the same impression. I was like, oh, is it just a recording? Is it just him talking, you know, to a computer? Well, then when we saw her, it was like this bittersweet. It was like, oh, good. He has someone to go home to. And yet at the same time, like, oh, but it's a program. But it was like this mixed bag of feelings. It was just like, it's good, but it's bad.
Yeah, because you think to yourself, like, oh, because he's a replicant, who is he going to hang out with?
Right.
You know, like, he's like, if he wants companionship, you know, like, is he going to live with another replicant? Do replicants live with each other?
I don't know. That's a question we don't know.
Do replicants have relationships like that? You know, like, what is it? Is there rules against that?
Right.
And so he has to resort to Joy, which is the name of the program.
Right. Which is sold everywhere, you know.
I love the idea of it, like how she was projected throughout the room, like with an arm. She wasn't omnipresent until later.
Yes.
But like how it moved on the ceiling, and so she had a limited range of where she could
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed
that. Oh, yeah. That was just, it was a realistic, you know, interpretation of what that could look like, mm-hmm. where you're only allowed to go this far, but hey, there's a hologram that's going to talk to you, you know. I loved
she
that.
She changed outfits on Q.
Yes. Yeah. I liked her. I liked her presence in his life.
I liked her too. I thought she was a great presence. I liked the whole storyline of like, I got this new piece of technology so I can take you with me. I right. liked that that wasn't just there. They introduced it.
Yes.
It wasn't just a part of, like, it wasn't just an understand piece of technology. It was, oh, like, I needed to save up for this, or I needed to get this. Not everybody right. has
like,
this.
Like, here's your freedom. Yeah. Like, you know, she's feeling rain for the first time. It's like, you know, he's a machine, but she is too. So they have that kind of in common. So it's like his way of freeing her mm-hmm. and yet, you know, keeping her close.
And the only thing that I really didn't dig on was that her death was so meaningless.
Well, and you saw it coming a mile away when he's like, well, if I take you here, then
like
and
if
erase
I
everything, then I'll never have you again. Like, well, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, they were definitely foreshadowing it. And I knew she was going to die, mm-hmm. but I was just hoping that I just wish that she would be able to do something to contribute to something with her death. Like, even if she just like appeared real quick and distracted them for a second. Mm-hmm. In order for him to get away, or for even Harrison Ford to get away, some sort of purpose, or even to the point where like he's like maybe he's like shot and she motivates him, like, get up, get going, you need to get going, you yeah. need to save yourself, or something
I
like
can
that.
See that,
but all she did was just like, oh, I love you, stomp,
mm-hmm.
and she's gone.
Yeah,
what's the point?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, yeah, I understand that. It felt like it needed to be more meaningful.
That's all I'm saying. Like, I like the character. I like what she meant to him.
Mm-hmm.
I like everything that she gave him and gave the audience. And it's I'm sad that I missed the scene where she was a big pink nude hologram because I had to go pee.
You peed at that moment.
I hate that I went at that moment to go pee. Because you told me that was a really touching moment.
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily touching. It kind of reminded him that she wasn't as special.
Oh, okay.
You know, she was a program is what it reminded him of. So
that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she even called him Joe in the advertisement. So
It
wasn't even special calling him Joe.
Oh, geez.
It was like a knife. And then he like looks at his gun and almost like questions things.
Oh, you didn't
bit.
Tell me that.
Yeah, I
you
did.
didn't tell me the Joe
well,
part.
I had to whisper really quick because you
I'm
went
sorry.
To the bathroom.
I'm
had to
sorry.
Talk in the theater.
But yeah, like I like the character. I liked everything about her except for how she died. That's all.
I get that.
Okay, so we talked about Robin Wright, and I don't think there's really much more to say about her character.
It was kind of weird when she came on to him.
Yeah.
It was a little I don't want to see that.
I don't know. That was weird.
Yeah.
Felt desperate and weird.
Yeah.
Whatever. It just felt odd. Everything about her was just, I thought she was trying too hard.
Okay. Yeah.
And she kind of repeated the same thing over and over again in every single scene. Like,
it's very
we're
true.
Trying to avert a war. You averted a war. Oh my God. We're about to have a war.
Find the sun. Find, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find more. That was about it.
Like, thank you. Thank you, Robin Wright. So Gosling's character.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of him being in the Blade Runner universe?
Oh, I really enjoyed that character because I think he had a lot of depth. You know, from finding information and, you know, kind of questioning where he came from and, you know, questioning the memory that he had, which that was one thing that kind of confused me a little bit, why he would have that memory and then they would be like, oh no, Harrison Ford's had a daughter, you know, and then they like had the whole thing where like, well, there's a son and a daughter, and then they like were going through the records and everything like that, and he kept questioning, like, a lot of the movie we were questioning whether he was the son,
right? And
but I guess I was disappointed with his character that he wasn't.
I think that's cool though.
Yeah, it wasn't predictable, because I even at that moment where we were like questioning, like, oh, is he the son, that first moment when we thought that, I was like, well, that's a little too easy, like,
yeah.
That, you know, Harrison Ford would have Ryan Gosling as his son. So it was then it became kind of interesting where, okay, this memory was implanted. And
so it's real,
right?
But it's still not his.
Exactly. Can we talk about how cool the memory device was?
Yes, I can't remember her name.
No, I can't either, but his actual
daughter. Yeah, his actual daughter. Like, yeah, like she was in a room.
Sterile
because she had a bad immune system or something. Mm-hmm. And who knows even if that's true.
That's true.
You know, like it could have been part of her cover story just to keep her indoors or keep her away from people.
It's possible.
But yeah, she had this device around her neck, like that you rotate a cylinder.
It was like a camera part almost.
Almost, yeah. Yeah. And that was how she manipulated all these holograms and these memories and everything like that. And so apparently she's the best in the business.
Right.
Of creating memories. Yeah, I loved how so many different things were unique and technology-wise that you didn't mm-hmm. expect, like Jared Leto's eyes. Like, oh, it was yeah. like six different of these like drone type things like floating around and
right. That and he attached that little thing behind his ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like and how they scanned the bones in at LAPD. Like, it wasn't perfect. It was kind of glitchy.
Right.
But it was very tactile, like you said. And it just all of the machinery just felt real. It felt like a logical extension of the future.
Absolutely.
It wasn't all Star Trek or Minority Report where it was all holograms up in the air and everybody's moving their hands around and tapping nothing.
Right.
It felt like you would know how to use it if you were in that world.
Yeah. And it was even interesting when they talked about the blackout and how the only thing that has remained was paper at that time. Like, they talked about with the records and,
oh yeah.
Yeah. That was just interesting. Like that, you know, okay, we used hard drives all the time and now we have to like go back to this like library system.
And it was
interesting.
Yeah. They didn't go into depth as to what caused the blackout.
Right.
But they did reveal that the blackout was significant not just because the power went out.
Right.
It was because all data or most of it was erased, including bank records and everything, and people's right. debts and identities and everything like that. So you had to start over. I can't even imagine what would happen in a world like
chaos.
That. Especially in a Blade Runner world where everything's already dystopian.
Right. Exactly. Like the last shreds of that civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, but I liked his character. I thought it was an interesting arc, and I thought that his purpose was unique and interesting, and his interactions with Harrison Ford too, like how they met. You know, they met much later in the story, and I kind of felt like a lot of that action happened at the end again,
mm-hmm.
which was very structurally like Blade Runner. There were some things that I was a little confused about. Like, Jared Leto, his character confused me a little bit, even though I was super engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, he played, I can't remember his first name, but his last name was Wallace, and he bought Tyrell Corp.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who kind of, like, saved Tyrell Corp and reimagined the replicants and made the Nexus 8s that were allowed in the streets, and right. I think Gosling was
compliant
and made it legal and made millions of replicants to service off-world and everything like that. And his motivations were not very clear.
Yeah, like when he makes, you know, like that replicant's born. And then he ends up killing her.
That was, I have no idea.
What was the purpose of that?
I still don't know what the purpose of that was, because it was a new model. She was birthed. He was inspecting her. And then he just slit her womb open.
Right.
And let her bleed out. And then she was gone. Why did he do that? I don't know. They didn't address it in the film. And also I guess we're trying to feel that his motivation for hunting down the son or daughter of Rachel and Deckard was because that was proof that replicants could reproduce. Then if that's the case, then he could build his army faster.
That was my understanding. But the fact that we're asking that shows it wasn't super clear.
Yes, and then like he said, he's like I want to, he's like, I can only build so many, and I can only build them so quickly, and I need millions more if I think he even said billions.
So he wants to breed them.
Right. And so he feels like if he can breed them, then he doesn't have to make them as fast. And because he said, he's like, we've only colonized 9 worlds, and he saw that as a misstep. He saw that as a shortcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me of Colonel Graf's character in Ender's Game.
Mm.
And I'm talking about the book series, not the movie, which just happened to be by Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But in the series, Colonel Graf is obsessed, literally obsessed with colonizing the universe with humans.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to expand humanity throughout the cosmos because he knows that someday they're going to be extinct on Earth.
Right.
And he wants to ensure the survival of the human race. And so he has to, like, he actually, in the book, he would put himself in stasis and only come out like once a month so that he could see the future of humanity.
Right.
For decades and centuries to come. And because he wanted to make sure that he could do what he needed to do.
To make sure human life continued.
And so that made me think of Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And he, instead of like where Colonel Graf focused on faster than light travel, Wallace is focusing on replicants being sent out to help colonize.
Yeah, that's an interesting parallel. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I think that intrigued me. And when he talked about that, I was like, oh, cool. Let's see more of that. Oh, no? Okay.
Well, and then we have, you know, the replicants gather together and kind of talk about
the revolution.
The revolution, which kind of fell flat for me.
It was underdeveloped.
Right.
It was so introduced it was and
one,
not developed.
It was like one conversation and then we abandoned it. And when we had Wallace talking about, in his own way, a revolution, which was very similar to the revolution that the replicants wanted, you know, I wanted to either see some type of connection between the two of them where he had, like, you know, encouraged them, mm-hmm. or was going to help them. But if there was no connection that we know of, and then it didn't follow through.
It felt like a couple different things to me. It felt like set up for a third movie that we're never going to get.
Well, I don't think we should get it. You know, like, I feel like that's weird.
And I don't yeah. think we're going to get one. That's okay. why I'm saying we're never going to get it. I said it felt like set up for a third movie that we're never going to get.
Okay.
Or it also felt like a movie underneath this movie that we didn't see. Like, it was...
Yeah, like a connection. Like, it almost felt like, okay, fan service for something that was going to happen or did, but it didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. It was like fan service to a novel that was never written.
Right.
So, or yeah, something like that. Something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
It was so weird because, like, that's, I think, why I knock it down a half star or even a full star is because of the revolution storyline, the colonization storyline, and I don't know, some redundancy of some of the characters where you're just like this, you explore great science fiction topics.
Absolutely.
But you don't develop them. And I think that's poor filmmaking.
Yeah, that was strange. And it just felt like we were left hanging.
Yeah. I don't like feeling like I'm left hanging.
No, we don't need to.
Like, if you want to hint at a revolution, that's fine. Like, if you want to, like, you know, Robin Wright's character was talking about a war. Mm-hmm. This is a logical extension of what she's talking
Absolutely,
about.
Absolutely, but then connect them all.
Yeah, and so, like, if Wallace wants them to be able to breed so that he can create a better his slave race, but yet the revolution replicants want them to breed just for, you know, their individuality.
Right.
And the
to show that they're their human side.
Yeah. I mean, that's they want the same goal but different end results.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting storyline, but that's not the movie we were watching.
Yeah. Which I'm very happy with the movie we were watching,
yeah.
but don't introduce these concepts where I'm like, I want to see more of that.
Yeah.
right towards the end of the movie.
Like, if we had Wallace trying to find, like, okay, cuz like if his motivation was if they found out that they could breed, then there would be no need for him and his services, then that would be a motivation that I could understand.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, if they find out that they can breed, then, you know, people aren't going to buy my product, or people aren't going to feel like I can't control my product.
Right.
So people aren't going to buy from me because of that reason, blah, 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 blah. That's motivation I understand. And I also understand the colonization storyline.
Oh, yeah.
But the colonization storyline needs further rendering, while the one that I just came up with on the stop, on the spot, doesn't.
Right. I get that.
That's the difference.
Yeah. And
I'm not saying my idea is better.
No, it's just, it needs to be more fleshed out.
Right.
Because it wasn't. What did you think about finding Harrison Ford in the casino?
I was surprised that we didn't see him until the third act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I was disappointed. I'm just surprised. Because I was hoping for a little bit more Harrison Ford, but while watching the trailers, I kind of got that feeling where I'm like, yeah, he's just going to show up at the end. I was right. Like, I was just glad that they didn't Luke Skywalker him.
Yes, because I was a little afraid of that. I was like, oh, we're just going to have him meet at the end or yeah, something like that. Whereas, you know, I kind of liked the idea of him being in this abandoned casino, and it reminded me a lot of Benjamin Button, where you know, he has to leave his family for the betterment of them, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in Benjamin Button, he's like, well, you know, people are going to question when I keep getting younger and you guys keep getting older. And so he leaves just in the, you know. And we always in that part are like, no, stay just a little longer. Whereas Harrison Ford is the same situation where, like, when Rachel did get pregnant, he basically abandoned them for a reason so that they would be safe, because right, he knew that they would always be looking for him. So that in itself was like tragic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But at least Rachel and he were together and they had a kid, you know. But I feel like they... I don't know. Every role that Harrison Ford decides to reprise, I feel frustrated with his future self.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and like actually you didn't see Crystal Skull.
No.
But like he got
on
to,
purpose. I yeah, did not see Crystal Skull because he told me I should not. You told me I should
I
not.
Did. I told you yeah, you should not, because it's a horrible movie. Right. And anyone who argues differently is fooling themselves. But like in Crystal Skull, like Shia LaBeouf is his kid, and they find out that it's his kid, and because he hooked up with the woman in the first film, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And in Force Awakens, we find out that Leia and Han finally got together, had a kid, but then he left.
Right.
And so that's Crystal Skull, Force Awakens, and now Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Where Harrison Ford is just
the same story.
Dad who leaves.
Yeah. It's like, oh, cool. I didn't really get to be a part of my kid's life. Like... just so frustrating.
That's so weird.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I hate that storyline. I absolutely hate that.
And I'm not saying that everything has to be like perfect, you know, or they're like, you know, happy, 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 but come on.
Yeah, it feels like either Harrison Ford is a character who is fighting to get his family back, or he's leaving them. There is yeah, no in between.
That's right. Right. But I don't like the future of Harrison Ford's characters, because it's always the same.
All of it put together was a very good film. Now,
I gotta talk about Sean first.
I was not an exit. But yeah, we need to talk about Sean Young, because a lot of people were wondering if Sean Young was going to make an appearance, because we didn't until the beginning of the film. Like until the film started, you know, we realized that Sean Young's character died mm-hmm, during childbirth. I was like, okay, makes sense. That way you don't have to bring back Sean Young.
Right.
And there was like, apparently like she made a stink in the press where she said like, if I'm not involved in the film, you guys should boycott it and stuff like that. Or I don't know, which sounds like publicity now.
Yeah.
But then we see a person who looks exactly...
Oh my God!
It like was Sean Young crazy. From 1982.
Crazy.
And now, obviously, it was CGI
right,
and digital makeup and everything like that. I mean, like we've seen this done since Tron Legacy.
Oh yeah.
And
it just keeps getting better. And better
Captain
though.
America: Civil War, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man,
Rogue One.
I mean, we're just seeing all of these CGI these younger CGI faces of characters that have either passed or are now a great deal older. And this one, I keep saying, every single movie I see this in, I keep saying, oh, this is the best I've ever seen it.
This was better than Rogue One.
This was better. I think the best besides this was Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War, in my opinion.
Okay.
And this was better than
no,
that.
No, this was better. Like, I can't tell whether it was the lighting, because it was that golden lighting, mm-hmm, like how we saw her for the first time in Blade Runner. But man, I was just like, that could be her.
I started
that could be her right now
from 1982.
Yes, I was like, whoa.
Started getting giddy when she walked out because they got the walk.
Perfect, oh my gosh!
Where she put her right hand on her
yes.
hip, like she was getting her cigarettes.
Yes,
and as she was walking out,
the heels,
everything was perfect.
The silhouette. I mean, you could know her from a mile away, her silhouette, and take that away, but her look was just perfect. It was perfect.
And then she opened her mouth.
Right. I was just like, Sean Young has such a unique voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like the quality and her cadence and everything. And then when she spoke, I was like, well, that's not her.
Which is really weird because I don't understand it. Because she's credited in the movie. Like at the end credits, Sean Young's name pops up. And it makes me wonder, okay, well, was it Sean Young? Or did they just have to credit Sean Young because they used her likeness? And then after the movie, I went on Google real quick and typed in Sean Young and Blade Runner 2049. And someone a couple of days ago, because they're jerks, and thank goodness I missed this, said, oh, reportedly Sean Young did film some scenes with Ridley Scott and Denis Villeneuve.
Okay.
But it wasn't confirmed or anything like that. And so I don't know if she actually did film with them or if they just used her likeness because the voice that we heard did not sound like Sean Young.
No.
But now I'm wondering, was it Sean Young and she just doesn't sound like herself anymore? I don't know.
That's a really good question. We got to research that.
I think, once the movie...
Or email us. If you found out before us, email us and tell us, like, hey, no, I know it's the situation. Like, post a link and say, like, here, this is your information. Tell us right now.
Yeah, guys, let us know. Like, if you know for sure, if you have an article
It was so good until she spoke.
Yeah, so, like, what you can do is you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, select Nerd Nuptial from the drop-down menu, fill out the form, it'll send us an email, or you can find us on Twitter, @JoinNerdParty, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. A lot of conversation goes on there. So, yeah, the Sean Young thing just blew me away, and I'm so happy that that was a secret, that that didn't get spoiled
for me. Yes, because it could have easily...
Because Rogue One was spoiled for me.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Princess Leia was spoiled for me.
Yeah.
The 5 minutes before we went to the theater.
You fell. I like, forgot about that.
You were getting ready in the bathroom.
Someone
posted something. And I was an idiot and just didn't think about it and went online and then boom, saw it. But yeah, this was not spoiled and it was such a perfect reveal.
It was funny because at the end, after the movie, we were like, he mentioned her eye color, but he should have said her voice.
Right? Yes. Like,
that's not Rachel's voice.
Yeah, he said it's like, Rachel had green eyes. You're like, no, you should have said it like, that sounds nothing like her. And then I'll be like, oh, okay. Cool. All right. He's in on the joke. Yeah.
And the thing I don't understand is because they had like her recording of her voice even. Like, I'm like, what?
Sounded absolutely nothing like her. And if it actually was her.
That's weird.
They should have looped her with a different actress.
Exactly.
Somebody who sounded more like 1982
right?
Sean Young.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, so you want to give it a star rating? What would you give it?
Out of how many stars?
Five.
Five stars. I'll give it a four.
A four?
Yeah.
I think when I walked out of the theater, I gave it a 4.5. But after talking about the revolution storyline, the colonization storyline, and Robin Wright's performance, I think that knocks it down to a 4 for me.
That's pretty high, though, for me, because I usually give things like
you
a 2.
You grade very harshly. You grade very harshly. So a 4 is like one of my fives.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But like I said when we started the show, I really have been thinking a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to go see it again. I really do. I feel like every time I'm going to watch it, I feel like I'm going to see more. I'm going to learn more, you know, and even with just performances or the surroundings, just like catching more things. Yeah.
Yeah. This was a great film and definitely one of my favorites of the year. Yeah. So everyone should go check it out. Well, actually, if you're hearing this far, hopefully you've already checked it out.
I was going to say.
All right. Well, you already heard at the, a couple minutes ago where you can find us and, this is a one thing that I want to mention is that one thing that they never talked about was whether or not Harrison Ford was a replicant, because at the end of the final cut, they infer that he could be because he has dreams of a unicorn And then one of those LAPD officers, Edward James Olmos, who actually made a cameo mm-hmm. in Blade Runner 2049, he makes a little paper origami unicorn.
Yeah.
And leaves it for him.
Yes.
How would he know that he dreams of unicorns if he wasn't a replicant? And that was never discussed in 2049.
Well, and that's a good question because, well, I mean, I guess it kind of was because the child was born, but was it two replicants having a child?
Yeah,
or was it a human and a replicant having a child?
And that's the thing is that we don't know. Like, if it is two replicants, then that's even crazier
right.
for colonization or revolution.
Right.
So I was kind of hoping, that was one thing that I was hoping would be addressed and it wasn't.
And yet it's kind of like one of those secrets. I feel like if they answered, like, I don't know, if I was the director, I'd be like afraid to answer that.
That because that might ruin some mystique yes, of the first one?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I get that.
So I'm okay with it.
Because I guess they didn't say no or yes.
No, they didn't. They didn't. I mean, the whole time they were kind of inferring that he's a human, but...
Well, it's the assumption that assumption. He's a human.
Yeah, it's true. But, yeah, I'm okay with it.
I guess that's true.
I still have that mystery, I guess.
All right, you made it okay.
So I think it's, up to you. How do you want to interpret it? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I love you.
I know.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
I don't.